This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. NPR Senior News Analyst Dan Shore joins us now to talk about the week's news. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And Dan, North Korea announced this week it has a nuclear weapon and that it's withdrawing from multilateral talks about its nuclear program. The statement was issued by the North Korean official news agency, and it said that North Korea needs this weapon, these weapons, to defend themselves against the United States. We should add there was no test of these weapons. How serious a situation is this?
How serious? Well, Iran says it has no nuclear weapons, and it may very well be lying. North Korea says it does have nuclear weapons and may very well be lying. North Korea says that it has to have weapons in order to defend itself against the United States. The United States says you can't have weapons because nobody will be committed to defend themselves against you. What's very strange here is what is at stake? What is it North Korea wants? North Korea wants to have a one-on-one meeting with the United States, not among the six countries which have formed the group, but they want to talk to the U.S. The U.S. says, not on your life. We're not going to talk to you. However, if you come to the meeting of the six, well, gee, we might get you out in the corridor to meet the American delegate, and you could meet him then. There's something weird about the fate of the world hinging on whether the United States can afford to talk to North Koreans.
Realistically, can nations not be expected to develop these weapons when the knowledge has become so widespread?
Yes, I think we may very well be entering a certain stage on our nuclear calendar. For some time, America had the only nuclear weapons, and the Russians began to catch up. And the next thing you knew, there was Britain, there was France. And now we've reached the point where we're really past a certain stage in our history. And you're right. You have no idea who will be the next one to have nuclear weapons. And this idea of non-proliferation and please don't and all the rest just isn't going to work for very long.
Let me ask you about Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice through eight European countries and also Israel and the West Bank. She delivered a major foreign policy speech in Paris, and her reviews all over Europe were good.
And they were. Well, Condoleezza Rice displayed a lot of poise, a great deal of charm. She apparently being called Cher Condi, Dear Condi, by President Jacques Chirac of France, who kissed her hand twice, which I don't think protocol requires.
She did. It was certainly one smooch over the line, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I guess that's what you call diplomacy in the modern age. She made a good speech on relations with Europe that seemed to go down well. But I'll tell you, I think more important than all of these is that they know that this lady has a channel to the president that Colin Powell never had. That's what makes her important to them.
Mm-hmm. And does it suggest to you that Europe and the United States would like to knit, European Union would like to knit a more fruitful relationship together at the moment?
I think so, and I think that's what Secretary Rice has tried to chart out for herself and say, whatever happened in the past, we go forward together. How about it? And there was a message that they liked hearing. Mm-hmm.
Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon shook hands at a meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh. Both agreed to a ceasefire. What suggests that maybe they can accomplish what eluded their predecessors?
I think the answer is it's the only hope you can have. You can't give up and say it is never, never going to be solved. You go ahead and you do it. And so the United States has engaged itself more or less in this new enterprise through Lieutenant General William Ward, who commanded the NATO operation in Bosnia. He's given an interesting title, Senior Security Coordinator, and he's supposed to monitor whether they comply with their ceasefire obligations or not. But this general means that America is there.
Mm-hmm. How significant is it that Mr. Abbas got rid of some of his top security officials after someone apparently couldn't stop an attack on Israel?
Yes, well, you remember that after they signed the ceasefire, there was an attack, another attack. And so the question is, this isn't going to work unless you get better people to maintain security among the Palestinians. This is at the very least a gesture, maybe more than a gesture, of Mahmoud Abbas saying, we are serious about this, and if we don't have security officers who can do it, we'll fire them and get other ones.
White House has prepared its annual spending plan for fiscal year 2006, $2.5 trillion budget, which recommends cuts to 150 federal programs, mostly in areas of health and education. Obviously, there's going to be a battle in the Congress. What does this proposed budget tell us about the administration's vision for the federal government in the near future?
That's an interesting question, Scott, because clearly the president has established budget goals that cannot be achieved without very sharp cuts in spending. Now, recall that during the Reagan administration, they had this idea called starving the beast. That is, that you don't give them the money, and without the money, that's it, and they'll go out of existence all by themselves. That is a pretty rough way of running a government, but apparently is what the president is planning to do, and that is if he gets a budget resolution from Congress and it doesn't contain all those cuts, he'll veto it, he says. And so that's it. It's very difficult to handle a president with a veto power who says, I'm not going to sign any bill which includes these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, this comes the same week that cost estimates for Medicare prescription drug benefits apparently rose sharply. Now it's estimated to cost $724 billion over 10 years. That's almost double the $400 billion that had been projected.
Yeah, that is one of the unhappiest parts of this whole episode. When they passed the Medicare bill, their actuary told them that this is what it'll cost. And they said, oh, my God, this is more than we thought. Keep this figure a secret until after we get the bill passed. Since that time now, they've got more actuarial work, and it turns out to be twice as much as they ever thought it would be. Does that mean you repeal the bill and say, let's start all over again? No. The president said, that's great. We'll go plowing right ahead.
Former presidential candidate and governor of Dumont's the old television network, I beg your pardon. Former governor of Vermont, Howard Dean, Dr. Dean, is poised to become the next chairman of the Democratic National Committee. The committee votes today. I don't believe there's a single opponent against him at this point.
Right.
What does his ascension to this post portend for the Democrats?
Well, I think that potentially he can help them to shake out of the torpor that overcame them after the election, that sense of being losers. Here's a guy who says, let's get up off the floor and do what we always can do, and let's fight for this and stop moaning about it. I think that is, in fact, what Howard Dean has come to signify.
Stop moaning, start screaming. Yeah. Sorry. All right. Thanks, Dan Shore.